Hi, this is Tyler Don Rosenquist, and welcome to Character in Context, where we usually talk about the historical context of Scripture with a mind to developing the character of Messiah, but it's not going to be that this week. You know, last week we wrapped up the 17-part series on Isaiah and the Messiah, and I think week after, we're going to start in the Gospel of Mark, because I think for Passover, I'm either going to record a special Passover program, or I'm going to re-air last week's Passover program, but I might just start into Mark. We'll see. But I want to talk about something really serious, and of course, no surprise, I'm going to talk about the coronavirus, but I'm not going to talk about the coronavirus. I'm going to talk about the effect that the coronavirus has had on the body of Messiah, at the very least, what I see going on social media, because right now that's mostly the only contact we're having with each other, right? And I'll tell you right now that I hope coronavirus, COVID-19, has, because it's only one of many coronaviruses, of course. Coronavirus is, it's a type of virus. And so I hope your families have not been affected by COVID-19. I have some dear friends in Colorado, friends for years, and they and their kids have been locked up for weeks with it. And one of the boys is recovering finally, and everybody else has it. The mom has picked up a secondary infection that she's fighting. And so that's been stressful. That's, you know, keeping a close eye on her. And of course, now in the news, we're seeing famous people actually dying from coronavirus, from COVID-19. I got, you know, dang, got so used to calling it that. It's a stressful time, not the least of which because it's at time like these that people start pulling out the different theories that usually only pop up on the internet between Shavuot, Pentecost, and Sukkot every year, when you have the time of year where everybody's expecting the end of the world again, and you have these things, and now this year all of them have come out. And it doesn't matter how many times these things are prophesied to happen this year and they don't happen. They just keep getting pulled out again, and they cause a lot of stress. But I'll tell you something, right now, the COVID-19 is stressful enough. And, but beyond that, I want to talk about something that happened on, Thursday night, or, it was Friday night, and a lot of you guys know I am a special needs mom. We adopted our sons, our twin sons, Matthew and Andrew, at birth, 19 years in and like 1 week ago. Best thing we ever did. But our son Andrew, I've talked about him in another broadcast I did last year on the miracles associated with healing with him. And he was born with spina bifida, hydrocephalus, clubbed feet, Chiari malformation, just a lot of fun Latin stuff. But because of this, he has a shunt in his head that drains off fluid. And of course, when you've got any family member with a shunt, and probably a lot of you do, you know, you have to look at their behaviors. They don't last forever. Sometimes the body will reject the shunt. Of course, we've had this one for 9 years now, and everything's going well. It's supposed to last for 20. We're hoping it'll last for another 10 or 11 years. That would be awesome. But I had a really bad week last year, and I was getting really, really angry at everyone in the world because I was seeing people just caught up and swept up in a lot of anger and fear and getting out of control. And I was unfollowing people on social media left and right because I couldn't stand. I couldn't bear. My heart couldn't bear to watch people tearing each other apart. I'm watching long-term friendships being destroyed because people are scared. And when people are scared, a lot of times they think they're hearing things from God that they're actually not. Sometimes they're hearing things from the enemy. Sometimes it's their own imagination or a combination of the two. And I am not immune to that. I do that too. I absolutely do that. I just usually learn to pull back and say, okay, Tyler, we know what you are capable of. Let's calm down and pray. And usually that stuff kind of, you know, I have a, what we call, you know, come to Jesus moment, literally. And the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit, does a work in me and removes the irrational fear and fills me with peace. And in the end, you know, we still have this situation, but I'm rational now. But I'm watching people just be swept up, and I'm watching people stirring things up. And like I said, I'm watching relationships being destroyed, and it was breaking my heart. And, you know, we all handle this kind of stuff differently. When I see people acting like this, I tend to respond with anger, because to me it's just so unnecessary, and I just see the same pattern over and over again every year. But this year there's actually something there that we're all stressed out about, and it's just, what it's done is it has highlighted problems that always exist in the body of Messiah. All right? Are we as mature as we think we are? Never. Come on, right? Are we as discerning as we think we are? Never. Are we as rational in a crisis as we think we are? Pretty much no. And when we get into situations like this, we finally see that, no, we are not all that in a bag of chips, and all of our insecurities and our fears, both rational and irrational, and our suspicious nature, and what Galatians 5 calls the works of the flesh, which stand in, you know, opposition to the fruit of the Spirit, you know, they just absolutely all come out to play. And so I was really angry. I was just very devastated. I often react to being very, very sad with anger. It's just a thing I do. I'm not excusing it. It's something I'm working on. But I was losing my faith in everybody, not in God, but in people. And then my son came home, my 19-year-old son came home from work. And his pupils were huge. And, you know, for a lot of you, you're thinking, oh no, he's a drug addict. Well, that's not what that means to our family. And he comes home, he says, I had to come home. My head hurts, and it's been hurting for 2 days now. Jeez, that boy. And I'm dizzy, and I was feeling some throbbing in my shunt area the other day, and I didn't tell you because in the past when this has happened, and he didn't tell us, it's always cleared up within, you know, a short period of time, but now it's been 2 days, and I don't feel right, and I'm at work, and I could deal with it last night, but it's hurting me now. And actually, no, he'd called in to work sick the night before, but he didn't tell us why. And so I'm looking at his eyes. The pupils will not contract them. And they're fully dilated. Well, they're not fully dilated, but they're really, really big. And that is one of the, that's one of the indicators that the shunt that's draining fluid off his head that keeps his brain from being crushed from the inside is failing. And, so, of course, at this point, you know, we've got decisions to make, and the first thing that we have to do is we have to take it to God. At this point, there's no brain damage happening, and so we have seen God through prayer cause his shunt to start working again. And in rather short order after prayer, and this has been going on since he was an infant. But this has been going on for 2 days already. Or probably not 2 full days, but about a day. And so I posted it on social media. And I will tell you, it was good for me. Because I saw all these people that I've been seeing tearing each other apart. Yelling at each other, screaming at each other, calling each other unbelievers, tools of the devil, enemies of the faith, so many things, liars, manipulators, saying there is peace when there is no peace, destroying long-term established friendships, breaking each other's hearts over all this responses to fear on both sides. And just the uncertainty and everything, you know, people biting and devouring each other, as it talks about in Galatians 5. And I saw all these people, and everything changed. And all of a sudden we had 500 people, you know, had seen the prayer request. Hundreds were responding, and people were genuinely praying, because a lot of people know Andrew. I know probably a lot of you, I don't think there are actually many of you listening, but quite a few of you, some of you who listen to this have actually known Andrew since before he was born, and we've been dealing with this since 6 months before he was born. But some of you have known about it since we were in church together when I first became a Christian. Some of you have just been on this crazy train for the last 9 years since I've been on social media. And a lot of you just jumped on when Andrew cut his finger off, and you all prayed, and we saw the miracle on that. But people all of a sudden were focused on something good, something we could control. Well, not so much control, but something tangible that we could do for somebody else. In this case, you doing it for me and my family. And I saw a body that had not been a body before. All of a sudden, we were a body. Again, and I'm not saying everybody, and I'm not saying that people weren't still, but all of a sudden we became obsessed with something that was larger than ourselves, and we all got to work serving a greater cause and acting out in faith and confidence and love, and everybody who did this was becoming once more brothers and sisters and grandparents and aunts and uncles to my son. And so while everybody was seeing this and responding, and we already had, I mean, within, you know, 10 minutes, we had hundreds of people had responded it. And I know these people, and I know they were seriously praying. And people were calling their churches and their synagogues and getting on their prayer walls and everything. And I will never know how many people were praying for my kid. And I went downstairs after the family prayed over Andrew and laid hands on him. I went down into his room, had him lay his head in my lap. And I just started praying over him. And of course, I don't stop till we get results. And to say that I could literally feel the power of people praying with me, I mean, I'm not yanking your chain, okay? I could feel it. I could feel a united front petitioning the throne on behalf of my son, Andrew, and And when Andrew came home, I said, how's your pain? And he said, it's a 6. Now, before you say, well, that's not a very bad headache, I'm going to tell you when his shunt was fully failing in 2011, in January of 2011, and his brain was being crushed from the inside, and his eyes had sunsetted, and he was in an amount of pain that would be almost unbearable for you and me. He said 8. Or no, he said 7. And then when he cut his fingers off, he cut his finger off and lacerated. He needed 41 stitches in both of his hands. And the EMTs asked him what his pain level was. He says 8. The boy has this insane pain tolerance. Either that or he just won't admit it. And he walked around at work for a week on bloody feet that he could feel because he didn't want to admit that his boots didn't fit right. So, I mean, this boy can tolerate pain. And so when I say 6, for us, let's try a 9 or a 10. Literally, probably. And so I knew the pain was bad. I knew the pain was bad. I knew the pain would be sending me to the hospital. And so his head is in my lap, and I'm praying, and I feel this power, and I feel this love, and I feel this authority coming from everybody else who is praying. Not just me, everybody. This is a body thing. This is coming together, united in love toward a common goal for good, because we all come into agreement and love. And Andrew starts saying, okay, the pressure is really coming off. And after a while he said, okay, pain's at a 2. Which probably for us is like a 5. And then sometime later he says, okay, there is no pain. And I got him up out of the chair, and I looked at his pupils. They were still a little bit dilated, but they were not like saucers. So there's only one response to the, or there's only one reason for that, and that is because the pressure in his brain had finally stopped building, and it was receding. Okay, the cerebrospinal fluid was normalizing, and the pump was working again. Either that, or it's draining down his spine like it would in us. You know, we just never know how God has healed him, chosen to heal him. I mean, I hope he doesn't need that shunt anymore. That would be awesome. But the important thing was the power of prayer that united us around somebody's need, and we all decided to love him. Well, I didn't decide to love him. I can't help it. But you decided to love him. Maybe it was a long time ago, or maybe it was just on Friday night, the first time you heard about him. Or maybe you're just hearing about him now. But it showed me what we have been lacking during this coronavirus situation, at least online, with all the nitpicking and the anger and the second guessing and the conspiracy theories and just everything that has distracted us from the one thing, well, not the one thing, but one of the things that we, well, the one thing that we all have the power to do, which is to come together as a body united in prayer for the people who are suffering. Because there's an overwhelming number of them, and I'm hearing from people all over the place, my friends who are empaths, and I have been told that I am a hyper empath. I can feel people's emotional energy, and a lot of times it's very overwhelming for me. A lot of people who are introverted are like this. People's emotions around us, we may not understand those emotions, but we can feel them, and it's like being in a situation like this with the coronavirus. It's like being caught in a series of waves, and they just keep knocking you down, knocking you down, knocking you down, if you don't know how to handle it. And so as empaths, you know, we've got a lot of power for good or for evil, because we get overwhelmed. God has given us this gift where we can feel these emotions so that we can help, so that we can pray, so that we can, we have this burden on us that we have to become super, super mature in the fruit of the Spirit so that we can be a force for peace in the midst of insanity, in the midst of sorrow, in the midst of anger and confusion, and when, you know, all the things that pop up when people feel that they're out of control. And, you know, we tend to respond inappropriately when we can't control a situation, right? I mean, I sure do. And, but empaths who get scared, who get fearful, who get out of control, who get sidetracked from the just feeling people's emotions to being overwhelmed and swept away by them, we can be a terrible force for bad. We can be at the height of the getting everybody to panic sort of situation. We are the worst culprits. Or, you know, the people who really know how to pray are the ones that are able to kind of ride out the storm and hold people's hands and hold people above water while the storm is raging. I think I'm probably kind of in the middle between those two. I'm trying to become the person who can hold people up, and sometimes I'm more successful than others. Anyway, I want to share with you something I wrote this morning, and I said lots of empaths right now were very emotional and up in the middle of the night. This is true. Suffering and praying on behalf of the world, and I'm hearing this from a lot of people. When we channel the emotional energy we feel correctly, it's a powerful force for good. When we step to the right or the left into fear and panic, as I did briefly last Tuesday night, which was like a long night, I'll tell you. You know, it becomes an incredibly destructive force, and we become the bringers of the works of the flesh. Well, what are the works of the flesh? It's from Galatians 5, the same chapter as we see the fruit of the Spirit, which is biting and devouring one another, engaging in and promoting enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, and envy. And I'm seeing that on social media all over the place. Like I said, people are destroying relationships, family relationships, long-term friend relationships, because of this. So, you know, if you, as I'm writing this thing, if you're feeling all this emotion within and are treading into the realm of fear, may I suggest taking a step back and refocusing on prayer and then channeling the strength you gain there into tangible good works, not just talk. Because there are things we can do for other people. It's a common tool of the enemy to distract us from the work we can do in the spirit by using the emotional energy we are picking up from the world, which they can't help but feel, and using it to overwhelm us. When we aren't careful, we become a victim of the crashing waves and become casualties ourselves instead of helpers. But God has given us this gift of being empaths to turn back on the enemy's devices and pray peace back into the world, to refuse to perpetuate the hostility and anger and fear right now, even when we feel it, because we're humans too. Sometimes I think empaths are more humans than other people. We're just too emotional. Now, something's wrong, yes, but we can get carried away and neglect the centering and cleansing of prayer. And we get into agendas, okay? It's easy to allow those emotions to rule over us and deceive us. It's easy to listen to people who have gotten carried away. We have a job to do. We need to bring sanity to a frightened world. If we can't do that because we're not fully in control of our faculties, what chance does the world have? They need us to be different. All right? And I'm going to say this really quick before we hit the, because we're about to hit the half here. If you want to do something and you've got a sewing machine, Joann's Fabrics has kits that they are giving away so you can make masks for hospitals and for the elderly and for people who are immune compromised. You have something that you can do. Heck, if you don't know how to sew and you have a sewing machine, you can still learn and do this. And I mean, what a great thing. You can bake bread and take it to shut-ins. You can call the elderly. There's so many things you can do. We can do tangible things that give us power to do good in this situation. Anyway, I will be right back in a minute. I'm Tyler Dawn Rosenquist, and welcome back to this week's, character in context, where we're not doing context, but we are talking about character, and I've been talking about, just the events of last week and how I was feeling so incredibly depressed because I see the division and, anger and in some people, it's actually descending into, adjust my studio thing here. It's actually descending into hatred and contempt, and people are being very controlling, very angry. Some people, I'll tell you, I've seen two people out there that, three, that have become absolutely delusional with this, and it's horrifying to watch. But anyway, I was talking about how, lately empaths have been up in the middle of the night. I just checked in my break between recording the sessions, I checked on the thing I wrote, and one of my Facebook friends, Allison Harrison, she calls it holy insomnia, and boy, yeah, that's what it is. It's holy insomnia. I've been an insomniac all my life, I did get over it for quite a few years, but then just recently, it's been back like gangbusters, but it was torture before I knew the Lord, and now it's like, at least, I'm not alone. But, I want to talk to you about some of the really creepy stuff that I've seen out there, and, goodness sakes, what day was it last week? I actually got blocked on social media by somebody who had been, Facebook friend. I've never met him and everything, for many years. And, about 6 months ago, he changed his first name to a Hebrew first name, and things just kind of started going downhill from there, I noticed. But he posted a post, and, I don't want to go look it up, because I took a screenshot of it, because I was so concerned. And no, I'm not going to give you any names. I mean, I hope you didn't even see this. And he's since taken his account down. But there's a lot of people who are, not a lot, some people, who are saying that if you are quote-unquote Torah observant, we're going to talk about that, and you're keeping the Passover instead of Easter, the coronavirus will not hit you. Actually, that was something he said later, but he said that this whole thing with the coronavirus will be over by the Passover, and I'm seeing a lot of people saying this, and I've been paying attention to who's saying it, okay? And they've been announcing it like a thus saith the Lord. That's what this guy did. He didn't say thus saith the Lord, but he did say it was a prophecy, and he later went on to say that no one who keeps Passover instead of Easter will have it touch them, and just a whole bunch of things, he said. And some people were saying, whoa there, buddy. You're making this a prophecy. What on earth is going on? People were questioning him. Hey, when somebody claims to be a prophet, like this guy was doing, we have a right to question. And if somebody has actual prophetic character, then they can stand up to the questioning, okay? I mean, if I said a thus saith the Lord on, which he didn't put it that way, but if I gave a prophecy and nobody questioned me, I would be seriously concerned. Because nobody should have that much credibility that nobody questions them. But I came on to, I said, well, wait, I've got friends who, I can't even imagine when the last time that they celebrated Easter was, and they keep the Passover. They keep it every year. These people are amazing believers. They, they adopted special needs kids, and these are people who don't just talk the talk, which so many people do on social media. We can't see them, so we don't know that they guys are seriously walking the walk, and they're all holed up now with coronavirus, COVID-19, and he's saying, well, you don't think they'll be better by Passover? He said, that's not what you said. You said that nobody who, you know, keeps the Passover instead of Easter will be touched by this. Well, he kept moving the goalpost, and finally, he blocked a whole bunch of people. He deleted his account. Of course, I got everything on screenshots because this stuff concerns me. When I see people making prophetic proclamations, then I believe that we hold them accountable. I do. I don't think you get a pass on that kind of stuff. But, I mean, that's an extreme example, but I want to talk about this idea out there about you are Torah observant if. Okay. If and only if. Because, first of all, I want to say that nobody's Torah observant. Not the Orthodox. Not the Hasid. Not the conservative Jews, not us. We are not Torah observant. I mean, first of all, like 48% of the Torah cannot even be kept today. Can't. Requires temples, requires priests. We can't do it. You know, we can practice, we can pretend, we can do a lot of things. And then certain laws we would not keep if we could. Torah says that we can have slaves. Torah says that a soldier can go and they conquer a city, and you know, after you've killed all the men and the married women and the male children, you just leave the virgins alive. I mean, this is the way the ancient world was, okay? Don't think that I'm tearing down the scriptures here. And there were reasons why these laws were in place. And there was no Red Cross. There was no anything in honor and shame. We're just not gonna, we're gonna go with it, okay? But if a soldier came home from, say, Iraq or Afghanistan with a woman, and her head was shaved and her nails were cut, and he'd given her 30 days in, you know, the barracks with him to mourn her father, and then he married her and he brought her home, people would be, there'd be blood running in the streets, especially among believers. Whether it's in the Torah or not, the truth is that the cross changed the way that we view foreigners, that we view outsiders, that we treat people. Christianity is the reason why there is no longer slavery in the Christian world. Okay, you still see it in Islam. Okay? And although it did operate shamefully, awfully, in a very non-Torah sanctioned way for a long time within Christian nations, it was conquered because of Christianity, through the works of people like the Quakers, especially, and men like William Wilberforce, powerful Christian voices who pointed out that slavery is not in line with our post-cross existence. Another thing, I don't know of anyone, even if it was legal, who wouldn't take advantage of being able to declare bankruptcy instead of selling yourself and your family into slavery for 6 years. Okay? To the person you owe money to who may not be a believer. Okay? No one's going to do that. I don't see people remitting debts after 7 years if people owe them money. I don't see us keeping a lot of the Torah that can be kept. I don't see young women being forced to marry the guy who seduced them, and that is not rape, by the way, in context. It's not. There's just so many things. Laws if a woman dies, I mean, I'm sorry, if a husband dies and a woman had not yet had a child by him, I don't know of any women who are really, really anxious to marry their brother-in-law. And Mike, no, just, mm-mm. I know he feels just as strongly about it as I do, and his wife Sue feels even more strongly about it. But those were laws designed for specific cultural realities and made a place for a woman in a family. When marriage was a contract between families, and without offspring, she had no way to be provided for because her husband's children inheriting was how she survived. And, but we wouldn't keep those laws, and there are others beside, and we're not keeping the festival laws. We're kind of observing, it's almost like we're playing with them, all right? And I'm not saying they're not serious. They are serious, but we're not keeping the Passover. We're having a Passover-like celebration. We certainly aren't keeping Shavuot, okay? And the only one, the one that we keep the most is Yom Kippur, but still the sacrifices are not being done, they haven't been done since First Temple times. So, you know, we say we keep the feast, but the truth is we don't, all right? All right? We're observing the days to a greater or lesser extent with some traditional or in non-traditional things, but we're trying to honor the days, but we're not keeping them. But I see people out there making claims of Torah observance, and it's a mantra. Torah observance is every bit of a paradigm, of an incorrect paradigm and an incorrect mantra as it is when Christians say that Yeshua, Jesus, did away with the law and that they don't keep the law anymore, because it's not true. They keep the law. They actually keep only a small number of commandments, fewer than people who call themselves, wrongly, Torah observant. Okay, and the ones they keep, I mean, let's look at the ones that they keep that most, quote-unquote, Torah observant people aren't really going to as great a lengths to keep. How about the Great Commission? You know, preaching the gospel to the world. We're not doing that. We're spending all our time, I mean, not all of us, okay? There are people out there who are doing it. I got a friend, Joel Sanchez, in Costa Rica. He does it. He's a missionary to the Costa Ricans. You know, when a lot of ministries went down there to escape, you know, the coming apocalypse, and then they found out that it didn't work, they came back. A lot of them do it, by the way. And I'm not mocking people. It's just that, you know, there were people who went down there to save their own skins, and then there's people like Joel who went down there to save other people. And he's doing the Great Commission. And he's also, you know, doing the other stuff, helping widows and orphans and the poor and the oppressed. That's what his ministry is. That's what we're called to do. It's all over Torah, telling us that we have to care for the widows, the orphans, the oppressed, the foreigners, and the sick. The people who are vulnerable. We are supposed to be actively involved in their lives. Are we? Not really. Christian ministries do that kind of stuff all over the place, gang. But as a matter of fact, when I want to do that stuff, I mean, apart from the money that I get every month to Joel, Crucified Life Ministries, by the way, and you can find him on Facebook, and he has a website too, which I don't know what it is offhand. Might be like clm.org, but don't type that in, because sometimes you type something like that in and you accidentally get a pornography site if you don't know. So don't do that. Never mind. But, you know, who's sending Bibles to China? Who's doing this? Who are taking care of getting people saved? And it's the most important work there is. Taking care of the vulnerable and getting work saved. It's the heart of the Torah that we do this. So that's what they're doing, like gangbusters. And yeah, they have the Sabbath on the wrong day. But they're doing these really expensive and mighty and risking their life kind of stuff to be missionaries to the world and sacrifice from their own wallets to make sure that this gets done. And on the other hand, we've got a lot of people on social media, a lot of people who, and the newer you are to, you know, keeping a few more commandments, and keeping a few more commandments, I'm really talking about the seventh-day Sabbath, the festivals, the tzitzit wearing, and, oh, eating cleaner. Okay, those are the four big ones that people really pride themselves on, and yeah, I use the word pride. It is pride, but those are easy things to do, all right? I mean, if you've got a Monday through Friday job, dang, nothing is easier than doing those. And if you have vacation time from your employer, you can do that stuff with a minimum of fuss. Of course, my son works swing shift, and so if he's going to take off a high Sabbath, he actually has to take off 2 days for every one. That is, dang. I'll tell you, that people who work swing shift really have to work hard at doing stuff. He also has to take 2 days off to keep the weekly Sabbath. Yeah. Not easy. Sometimes we don't really understand that we're living in exile where we can't live as Torah observant life as we would hope and as we would pretend, frankly, to do. So we've got these easy commandments to keep. Okay. Oh, you don't work for a day. Oh, you poor thing. That is such a burden. Come on. Are we really proud about this? Throwing the right parties and eating the right things. Okay, that's nice, but it's not going to get anyone killed. It doesn't really, not a financial burden. It's not dangerous in any way, and for those who are wearing tzitzit, okay. Again, not dangerous. Okay, most people don't even know what they are. I certainly didn't until I got involved in all this. But people, when they first come into Torah, and sometimes, unfortunately, for a long time afterward, they act as though the only commandments that count are those ones. The easy ones. The lighter matters. The ones that the Pharisees were actually doing, and yet still got called lawless because they weren't taking care of the widow, poor, orphan. They weren't doing righteousness and justice to people. They got called lawless when they were doing they were keeping the Sabbath, Jack, all right? And they were keeping the festivals for realsies. They were bringing their sacrifices. They were bringing their tithes on everything into the storehouse. They weren't neglecting this stuff, but they were failing at the works that mainstream Christians go above and beyond on. And frankly, you know, when I want to do those things, and I do, I support those kind of things, I do it through Christian organizations, because they're the ones doing it. Except I saw you for Joel, Crucified Life Ministries. And if you ever want to know how hard it is for a Hebraic roots-ish Torah-promoting ministry to get missionary funding from people in the Hebrew Roots Ministry, you just get on the phone with Joel. He'll tell you all about it. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking how little support he gets from people who claim to care about this stuff. But going on. So what we do when we say that those are the only commandments that count, the Sabbaths, the feasts, because that's what we're saying when you call yourself Torah observant and you only keep those extra ones, and you're maybe not even doing the weightier matters, you're saying, well, you're not Torah observant unless you're doing those, like, four things. And I know there are. Well, are there more? Not that I can think of right now, the mezuzah on the door. But you're saying that following the sexuality laws doesn't count as Torah observance. Ooh. Following, you know, there's this guy called, I think his name is Matt Friedman. And when I put the podcast up for this, I will put you up a link, but he wrote this article, The Mosaic Law is Not as Divisive as You Think, and he pointed out that of the, what is it, 52 or 48, it's one of the other, percent of the laws that can still be kept today, Christians keep the majority of them, and we only keep like 8% more. And I was like, I read that before I wrote The Bridge. I read that back in 2004, and I was like, dang, dang. You know, you look at it, but when we claim that the only things that count are, you know, eating and parties, we're saying that that makes you Torah observant, but all the other things, no, you're lawless. You're lawless because you have a different cultural understanding on these few things. You've been told they're done away with, so you don't do them. You've been told they change the day, so, you know, God doesn't count all this. But I'm going to ask you something right now, and this is just, I want you to really think about this if you've never thought about this before. Why did you come to, and I'm not going to say come to Torah, because that's not right either, because everyone is keeping a lot of Torah, all right, everyone, except maybe sociopaths or something. Really, you've got to try not to keep Torah in this society. You really do. But when you figured out that Torah is for today, more Torah than you thought before was for today, was it because you figured it out yourself? Was it because you were so smart? Was it because you were so obedient and wonderful? And just by the nature of your pure virtue, you figured it out? Because that wasn't how it happened with me. Oh no. No. I was sitting in front of my computer eating bacon. I kid you not. Minding my own business, doing a little internet search on the day before Shavuot, or was it 2 days before Shavuot? No, I think it was the day before Shavuot, so it was a Sabbath. And all of a sudden, I hear this voice, and I know this voice. This voice never tells me nothing I want to hear. And it says, would you like to explain to me those verses that say you can eat pork? And I was like, I was shocked. Now, I'm not someone who never read the Bible before. I've read the Bible. I had, at that point, read the Bible over and over and over again, front to back, leaving nothing out. I used to say, I've read the whole thing, including Leviticus, and I laugh, but, you know, yeah, so funny. But I went back, and those verses that I thought said one thing actually said something entirely different, and I was floored. And it wasn't because I didn't know those verses, because I obviously knew, excuse me, right where to look. But the point was, I loved God, all right? But I didn't know. I wasn't rebellious. I wasn't being a gooberhead. I wasn't this, I wasn't that. There was nothing wrong with me. God just hadn't shown me a way through the paradigms that had been trained into me. It wasn't my fault. It's not the fault of anyone. We believe what we believe, what we believe. And I can't even tell you how many times he's done it with me. I still have things that are wrong. Don't ask me what they are, because if I knew, I wouldn't be wrong with about them anymore. I would just get rid of those things. I wouldn't believe them. I would be, you know, it's not like people go on. But God shows us things, right? So when we are criticizing somebody for not knowing about the feast, for not knowing about the Sabbath, for not knowing about eating, what we're doing is we're criticizing God. Make no mistake. Oh yeah. We're saying, you know, yeah, now that he's told me, he needs to tell everyone else right now. Well, what about all that time he wasn't telling you and other people knew? What was wrong with him then? You see, we gotta be careful. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week's Passover. Have a wonderful Passover. And we'll see you in a couple weeks for the start of the Gospel of Mark.